Hello, Carrington. How are you?
Hello, Kay. Just a small town Kay living in a lonely world. How are you?
Great.
I'm going to attempt to shoehorn in as many Journey references as I can.
Oh, God.
This is the game I'm going to be playing. How about you?
Yeah, this is the last episode of the Eat by a Groove podcast.
I always knew it was a risk.
Mm-hmm.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
I have a question for you, though, Carrington.
Hit me with your question stick. Ow, ow.
Have you metal enough to make siege on the Dreadlord himself?
I do indeed, Mr. Tolkien. I mean, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I've got metal.
Yeah.
I will meddle in his business.
Journey didn't play metal.
It was, the cover's kind of like an AC/DC album, so it's sort of metal. Journey!
I could not name another.
Are you ready to rock?
Could not name another Journey song other than that, the one you sort of started with. Small town girl.
As the wheel in the sky is my witness, I will stop referencing Journey. So we played Journey.
Yes, we played Journey. Journey was Infocom's last game. Their final game.
Not the final game we'll be playing, because we kind of messed up the order.
We kind of messed up the order.
It was the last game they did. It's the game that killed Infocom.
Yes. It is the cornerstone of Infocom games.
You would think Cornerstone would be the cornerstone of Infocom games.
You would think, but no.
It is actually Journey.
Right. Let's see. Yes, so it was this game, and it was had graphics, because suddenly, for some reason, the graphics in your mind were no longer good enough.
Well, they met me. And they're like, oh, that guy's mind. Let's put some graphics in this one.
Right. So we're going to talk about Journey.
Yes.
Yes, it was released in March 1989. It was available for the IBM PC, for the Macintosh, for the Amiga, and still for the Apple II, the machine that keeps on giving.
The 1980s always kind of ended for me really more around 1987. Like, I think of the really late 70s as feeling very 80s.
Hmm.
And the really late 80s is feeling more 90s. You get big, colorful shirts that wear hats and stuff. And so I wonder if that's it. Maybe it was like the Infocom games up to 87 are the ones I like, my favorite decade. And the rest are just, I don't count as being 80s games.
Right.
Maybe that's what's going on here.
This doesn't feel like an 80s game, especially by your measurement. I mean, by your measurement, it's a 90s game, having come out in 1989. Yeah. Let's see. The category of it was Chronicles, which was the one and only game in that series.
Yeah, it was, because it's actually called Journey, the Quest Begins.
Right. It was supposed to be the first of three.
That's all that happens with that quest. It begins.
Right. It begins, and thankfully did not continue. It was written by Mark Blank, and the illustrations were... this art, like we said, illustrations by a guy named David Langacy, which I think you have some interesting things that you know about, Mr. Langacy. Donald Langacy.
I Googled this person.
Yeah.
And said, like, who is this? Who is this graphics person that they tapped to do this? And have you looked at his stuff online?
Only because you added his links to the show notes some time ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's weird. It's a lot of weird stuff, man.
He also did the art for Shogun, which I don't think we knew at the time.
I did not know that at the time. Yes,
right.
So it's the return of Shogun.
Right. Yeah.
Shogun 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, but there is some weird stuff, and we you found his website, and you can look and you can see all his weirdness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was a one, I guess, like kind of neat thing that happened was searching for this fellow, I found a site that somebody had put up all about about his art, and then asked sort of about, hey, what's up with the Infocom things? Like, if you look on his personal website, it doesn't show any of the Infocom things. Those shows a lot of digital artwork. And so somebody, I can't remember his name, but somebody in Seattle, so kind of your side of the continent, had said, hey, I reached out to him and said, what's up with the Journey artwork? Can you tell me anything about it? Or tell me about working with Infocom. And weirdly, his response was all that he got interested into the computing world. He says that the computer world was rewarding for a while, but he found it like super limiting, like being low res, not enough colors, and he was just like basically happy to leave it behind. Like, it just was a super negative experience, it seems. Didn't want to talk about Infocom specifically, but did talk about how dabbled in that funky computer artwork, and it's just, you know, not my bag. It was just kind of interesting that the artist remembered doing it, but it doesn't appear, none of this artwork appears in his official stuff or official website or whatever. Just kind of dabbled in it, didn't like it, left it behind.
Right, some gig that he took, and he did his job, and he was paid, and was just like, well, glad that project's over. We've all had those projects, right?
I've got a few on the go at the moment.
Oh, no. We forgot about the mailbag. Do you want to do the mailbag? Or?
I do want to do the mailbag because, we get letters and stacks and something of letters and whatever.
We get stacks and stacks of letters. We get sub-stacks sometimes.
I only got pointers. I got handles to letters. My letters are over there, says the thing over there.
Sure. I have linked lists of letters. Okay, let's read a letter.
Okay. I got one from Trevor. Trevor wrote us in and said, hey, Kay and Carrington, just want to let you know how much I love the podcast. I love the dynamic between you two. Born in the late 80s, that's actually the 90s, I grew up with the LucasArts adventure games, and I fell in love with playing them with my dad on our old IBM. I discovered the text adventures a few years back and have only managed to make it through Hollywood Hijinks, almost hintless, except the maze and a puzzle near the end. That's actually a good choice, though. Well done, Trevor. He continues. I know you've been asked about other similar games ad nauseum, but I hope you continue to play the Magnetic Scroll games. I just started Corruption, and I keep wondering what you two would have to say. Regardless, thank you for doing this podcast, and I wish you success in all of your future endeavors. Okay, we're going to have future endeavors.
We are. The sci-fi book.
Trevor's
podcast.
An optimist.
Nice.
But thank you, Trevor.
That's lovely.
I hear many good things about the Magnetic Scroll stuff. That's one of the brands that people have written to us about quite a bit.
Yes.
Magnetic Scrolls gets brought up. My vague idea is it's like the British answer to Infocom.
I believe.
Or maybe Infocom was the American answer to Magnetic Scrolls. I don't know.
Sure. I will read a letter as well. We got one from Neil Blitt. It says, hi, Kay and Carrington. It's always nice to hear, he's writing about Arthur. He says, it's always nice to hear that you enjoyed a game. I was interested in your comments about the spelling of whiskey versus whiskey. That is, should it or should not have an E in it. In England, we have no tradition of making whiskey. In England, where we have no tradition of making whiskey, we spell it whiskey with no E if it's Scotch, and whiskey with an E if it's Irish. There are companies that make English whiskey, no E, now, and it's spelled whiskey with no E. There you go.
That's interesting. I know in Canada here, it's whiskey, no E, so we share that with Scotland. So all the toughest, coldest countries, we don't have time for no E. Give me that whiskey. And then the U.S. and Ireland are the E's.
Well, all those extra U's put into everything must take a lot of time.
So we've used up all our vowels. Just give me a drink.
Right. I have no idea how whiskey is spelled here. It's not I could tell you how vodka is spelled. Oh, yes, I can.
In America, in America, whiskey is spelled with the E.
Is it?
Cool. It is. I know that because if you go into Canadian liquor stores, they'll have like American whiskey and Canadian whiskey. And so you see the signs.
I see
the signs. You know who else saw a sign?
I have Canadian geese on my vodka.
Oh, Canadian geese. they kind of suck.
I also have Canadian geese in my backyard. A lot of them.
I don't really like the gooses.
No, the geese are jerks. They're real jerks. Really, but the babies are so cute. The babies are,
well, baby everything's are adorable.
That's true.
So that's how we don't kill and eat them when things are terrible. But like geese, man, geese are just all MFers. I don't like them.
They do. No, and then I have my backyard is filled with them, and then they poop everywhere, and that's gross.
So. Oh, our namesake. Let's name him after our country. Anyway, Jason. Jason wrote in to say, hello, Kay and Carrington. I can't say I'm a longtime listener of the podcast. Actually, he said more, but I thought it would be funny if I stopped there. I can't say I'm a longtime listener of the podcast because I only just picked it up earlier this year. But I am a completionist listener, as I have been able to listen to every podcast. I am a longtime listener of both of you, having listened to, I think, every No Quarter podcast, as well as being there day one for the Antic podcast.
Wow.
During the podcast for Shogun or Arthur, you read some post-take-all feedback where a listener asked you what you would go back and improve if someone were to fix these older games. For me, it's unquestionably the removal of unwinnable states. Mm-hmm. They're absolutely the bane of these games, as I find myself worried every time I come across a puzzle that I can't seem to solve. I then plunge far too quickly into cheating because I want to know if I can actually solve the puzzle or if I've been walking dead for the last few hours. Take us all the way, guys. Cheers. Nice, Jason. First of all, yes, take. Yay, rave, take. Mm-hmm. And unwinnable states. Those are going to come up as we discuss Journey. Oh, my goodness.
Well, the manual of Journey promised that there are no unwinnable states, so I'm sure it'll be.
The manual of Journey lied.
I'm sure it's going to be fine.
It's technically not lying, technically true, best kind of true, blah, 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 blah. But in this case, worst. So I argue it's all unwinnable states, but we will see. But anyway, thank you for the email, Jason.
I got an email from Florian, who said, I wanted to take this chance to write to you in time before you wrap up your last episode on the Infocom games. I stumbled over your podcast around the time of the first episodes and started listening on my commute, back when I still had a commute. Remember commutes?
I remember commutes. I don't actually miss those.
No. But it was prime podcast listening time. I will grant you that. Since then, I'm always happy when I see a new episode coming up on our podcast feed and look forward to finding time to listen to it. I played one game through in this time and therefore was allowed to jump the spoiler fence. That was Ballyhoo, which I quite enjoyed, even if I needed lots of hints. Yes.
Good choice. Excellent game.
Around this time, I became very technically interested in Infocom games as a fun thing to do, decided to reverse engineer and port an existing game, I chose Trinity, into a modern programming language from scratch. This was before the source code of the games was leaked, hence I was working from a decompiled version of the game. Even when the leak happened in 2019, I decided it was an interesting challenge and continued to continue on. I learned a lot, coming from pure manual guesswork to now having a set of tools to speed things up considerably. I still have 20% of the game code to go, but I think that will not be that long anymore. By the way, he wrote this back in April. I hope I haven't read this email before. I'm sure he's done by now. Thanks for a very enjoyable podcast.
No pressure.
For providing an up-to-date view on those interesting and seminal games and for bringing your awesome personalities into it. Thank you. I look forward...
I do indeed bring my awesome personalities into it.
I also bring a personality. I look forward to the podcast on Journey, and here it is. Wow, good job.
Welcome to the future.
Florian, yeah. Hopefully many more times of hearing you. Best regards, Florian. Thank you, Florian.
Cool. What else we got? Oh, here's a good one from Makai. He says, hi, guys. I'm a fan of the podcast, and I enjoyed the last Eaten by a Cruise episode as well. It came across as a fairly complete and accessible introduction to Infocom games for noobs and more modern users. Mm-hmm. As part of the regular audience, of course, I appreciated you two swapping Z and Z pronunciations, possibly also the get versus take. I do have a life besides listening to podcasts, really. Text mode adventure-wise, I'm satisfied having only played Scavenge, as I like to call it, and about 3% of Leather Goddesses of Phobos. To quote someone else, I'm happy you play these games, so I don't have to. Keep up the good work, and looking forward to Journey. Nice. Well done.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's all I have marked for males.
Then that's enough.
It's plenty.
I know I got others, but that's enough. Okay. I'm done with you listeners.
Sacks and stacks of nothing more. Nothing else.
Stacks and stacks of nothing. They go worse.
Okay, so yes, Journey. We played Journey, and Journey. I already sort of started talking about it because I forgot about letters. But now there's Journey. It's as you said, Journey, the quest begins. It was supposed to be the first of a trilogy, much like another famous trilogy, which I've never read. I'm sure you've read them, right?
You've never read Lord of the Rings?
No.
That's interesting. I use that tone. Us nerd people, we do that all the time. The fake outrage. You've never seen Star Wars?
Yeah.
I clutch my pearls. I hate when I do that, and I apologize. It's totally fine for to have not read something or seen something or whatever.
But it is one of those. It is kind of okay to do that with this. Like, it's one of those things that it's so nerdy and so, been out there so long. Like, you know, it's like.
Yeah,
it's
I'm
like,
not saying you haven't had time.
Right, it's like, right. It's like, I mean, like Star Wars or whatever. You know, it's just
never
like.
Never heard of it.
Right. So yeah, no, but I've never read it, and it's like it holds no interest to me. I know I've paged through it. I had a roommate who had the books and
did you ever read the Hobbit? A lot of people have read that, but not the full trilogy.
No, I haven't read any of it. The Hobbit's the first of the trilogy, right?
Yes. Think of it as a prequel-y type thing. So yes, if you were reading them in order, you'd read it that way. But it's really a separate thing. And The Hobbit's kind of a book for kids. They're all books for kids, but whatever. But The Hobbit's a lot easier to read. It's a lot shorter. It's a lot more accessible. So a lot of people read that, but can't necessarily get into the heavy, meaty language of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. So.
Okay. No, I guess I know nothing about it because I kind of thought The Hobbit was book number one, but... anyway, it feels not interesting to me, and was probably part of the reason why this game was not super interesting to me.
This game really, really is interested in being Lord of the Rings.
Is it?
It is. There's so many things where it's just, let's just change that name. It's not Gandalf. It's a totally different wizard. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, the cover of the box cover, it has four people facing the viewer, and they look like they're adventurer types, and they're dressed for adventuring, and one's holding a club or a mace or something, and one's got a what are those things called, those fire sticks?
Torch.
Thank you.
One's smoking a cigarette.
The other one has a dagger, and they're like, they look like, we're gonna be fighting you or whatever. And they are.
Well, do they though? There's like the main person in the middle who's got that weird blue hood, total surf looking, who's got a big club. Well, I call it like a staff or a shillelagh or something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Who looks like a little angry and a little inquisitive. Over that person's right shoulder is a guy looking stern about to draw a sword.
Right.
Okay. Then there's Torch Person, who's just staring at the torch like he's hot. He's tripping balls. Like, what is this in my hand? And then there's a person with a knife, just like mouth slightly agog, like, I stabbing? What is
yeah,
like,
no,
it's,
yeah,
no, it's very weird.
Dagger Man definitely looks like, first of all, he's 12 years old, and he's never been in a fight before, and he's going to get his ass kicked.
I know the feeling. Yeah. I think Dagger Man, even though Shillelagh Surf Wood Hat Dude is front and center, I think Dagger Boy is supposed to be our avatar. I think Dagger Boy is Tag. Hmm. That's how I think of it.
Hmm.
I think Shillelagh Person is supposed to be Prax.
Hmm.
Or Praxix.
You put more thought into it than me, but I'm going to start calling you Dagger Boy now.
I like it.
The back of the box says, "Have you metal enough to make siege on the Dark Lord himself? We shall see." If you've ever been spellbound by a fantasy story, captivated by a role-playing game, or enthralled by interactive fiction, Journey will rouse your imagination to new heights. Join us in our journey. travel beyond the known boundaries of interactive software into a new world of computer storytelling. Mark Blank, the pioneering co-author of the enormously popular Zork and Enchanter trilogies, weaves a fabulous tale of great adventure, drawing from the highest art of storytelling and the excitement of role-playing games to create a fascinating new kind of computer entertainment. In Journey, you become part of a mesmerizing epic created in the tradition of J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. For 5 long years, failed crops, tainted water, and sickness have blighted a peaceful land. Brave villagers have set forth to find relief for their suffering region, but none have returned. Now, yet another small band is preparing to begin the Odyssey. You'll share the adventures of Tag, Praxis, Bergen, Escher, and Minar as they solve puzzles, overcome obstacles, explore unknown lands. Pass into the world of Journey with ease. The game is simple to learn. Your challenge lies in choosing the right path, casting the best spell, and knowing whether to lie or tell the truth. Your imagination will be taxed more and more with each passing day as the difficulties become increasingly complex. As the tale unfolds, you become acquainted with the characters and their personalities. Each character acts on his own, sometimes advancing the quest, sometimes hindering it. You help them decide where to explore and what actions to take, taking part in their strategies and problem-solving. The intrigue of a masterfully told story, the thrill of being a part of a great adventure, the challenge of leading the tale to its climactic conclusion, this is what makes Journey a uniquely compelling entertainment.
Does it? Well, funny, when you were reading off the names of the people,
yeah,
Tag, Praxix, Bergon, Bergeron, Escher, and Minar.
Yeah.
Tag, that's our little knifey boy,
right,
who's our avatar. Kind of is a person writing the chronicle. We'll talk about that. That's your avatar in the game. Mm-hmm. Praxix is wizard dude.
Okay.
I don't remember. I remember the other three, but I can't differentiate them. I'm like, and then there was these other, and like they are, and the rest here on Gilligan's Isle. Like, I'm like, which was which again? I think one was a dwarf. I literally can't remember who was who. Boy, those are some great characters.
Yeah, I think isn't Minar the guy that you pick up in the bar?
What's in the bar thing?
In the bar, yeah. Isn't
maybe?
I think so. I don't know. I
thought that was the dwarf guy.
I think that's part of my. This is me. This is just my thing. Part of my issue with high fantasy stuff. It's just why it's not for me. It's like all the like. Completely like made up names of people and towns and
all names are made up.
Yeah, I know.
You know that, right?
What? Carrington. Some names more so than others. Anyway, I don't know. And I have a hard time. Just I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. Although some of the names are weird, and you know, it's like we're going to the land of Bumble Jumble. And like, okay.
I love that land, first of all.
Oh, it's,
I actually really like high fantasy. As a kid, I read a ton of it. All the Tolkien stuff, but like lots of things. High fantasy, low fantasy, like things with elves, things with magic, mixes of sci-fi and fantasy. I dug it all. In the last 20 years or so, I've kind of stopped reading that much of that, and because it's all become vampires and stuff and urban grittiness, and I'm just not as much into it. And I'm really just like all sci-fi all the time now. But I have read tons of it, and I have a fondness for it, but not so much for this game. But I don't think I went in negatively predisposed because of the genre, because I actually like the genre.
Sure.
And I watch a lot of fantasy movies and stuff. I've watched Hawk the Slayer more times than most people who starred in Hawk the Slayer. So, you know, I do like me some fantasy.
So, yeah. So, Tolkien, which...
Oh, I have the box for this. I'm holding it in my hands.
Tell me
this
about it.
This is the sound of tapping on the box. Ooh. It is a square box. So, it's like a different
like,
shape
like
than
it's a cube?
The Infocom games. Oh, no. Just like a thin... Imagine a cube... That was much thinner on one side. So it's just a box, but two of the sides are the same and one is much thinner. So what's that shape called?
Two of the sides of the same.
Squishy cube.
Okay.
So not a die. Imagine you took a slice of a die.
Okay.
It's that. It's a box. It's a square box. It's what everybody assumes by square box K.
Okay.
I hear you're meddling. I have issues with it. So in the bottom right
corner. You have issues with the box? So you haven't even theoretically, you haven't even started the game yet. You haven't even unwrapped the game yet. You already have issues because of the box.
I do. One of my first notes was that there is a major and probably highly problematic metaphor contained in this box. Mm-hmm. Before I even started playing the game, I was like, oh, so we're going to get to that. On the outside of the box, it's got this, it's not a sticker, it's like printed on the bottom right corner where it says Infocom Roleplay Chronicles. It's really pushing the whole idea that they would do like a bunch of these kind of things, but they did not. So we've got the Journey Instruction Manual that's inside here. And so that is essentially taking place of the Browsy, but it's not being a gray box thing. There's just a printed instruction manual that looks like it is 11 pages. So it's got all the usual stuff like how to play. And because and we'll talk about the interface. The interface is very different than a typical Infocom game. And I kind of applaud that. They really tried to do something different with it. So that was cool. So you got your manual worth reading. There's a very nice map. That's what we'll be up now. This is the sound of the map. I'm painting you a word picture, okay? And I'm flicking maps at you. Okay, here we go. Wait. Okay, so it's printed on paper, but it's a really nice, thick linen paper, so it's not as nice as the cloth maps that were popular in games kind of slightly preceding this. So it's not as nice as an Ultima 3 map or whatever. But it doesn't feel just like paper. It's like a really thick linen. It's really pleasant to the hand. And it's nice. Like it's large and it's gotta be half a meter squared. So it's a big thing. And it shows you the overlay of the coastal plain and like the area that you're playing in. So it's not a map like a detailed Infocom map of all the squares and all the locations. It's more like this is the setting of it. So you get a sense of where the Sunrise Mountain is versus Lendros or whatever. So, and I like it. It adds a lot to the, to kind of get in the mood of playing the game. Then we have this thing, the metaphor. Won't talk about that yet. There's the feely. So it comes with this little bag. Can you hear that?
I can hear your little bag.
That's that's my little bag. So,
yikes.
Oh, we're getting kicked off Apple for this one. So it's like a little...
Rub it. Rub your little bag. Rub your little bag a little more.
It's great. No. You gotta buy me a drink first. So it's got it's like a little tiny velour bag that has these little drawstrings. One of my drawstrings is pulled out, alas. So I gotta figure out how to feed that back in. Mm. So it's a wine colored, like a red wine colored velour bag, and inside it is the main feely for this game. And it's a tiny little crystal shard. It's a terrible feeling. Like it's just a little plastic thing. And it does look like if it was part of a setting or whatever, like a little D&D miniatures campaign, it would look kind of cool. Cause it's all shard, like it's all faceted and stuff, but it's light plastic. And it's kind of okay, but okay. Do you have Christmas crackers when you celebrate Christmas? Do you have those? Some Americans do. Some Americans don't. The things where you pull and they pop and you get a crown you can wear and little stuff in it.
I don't know what that is. I have oyster crackers.
Okay, so those of us who still say God Save the Queen on occasion, we have Christmas crackers. So a Christmas cracker is like a tube that's been sort of tied up on each end. So imagine a tube where somebody's put ribbon on both ends to close it. Although nowadays they're all paper and whatever. But and then what you do is there's a thin line, like a cardboard line that runs from one end to the other inside this tube. And these are all given out around Christmas and Thanksgiving, that kind of thing. But especially it's a Christmas thing. And so you grab your Christmas cracker and you turn to your neighbor and you hold one side of the cracker and they hold the other and you pull. And the little piece of cardboard that runs through the middle actually has two different parts and it's kind of glued together with a bit of like gunpowder, like caps material. So you pull it, it goes pop. It's like a bang. It's really fun. And then inside it will be a paper crown. So you put the crown on and everybody at the table wears their silly paper crowns. My family totally does. And there'll also generally be a little printed joke, like something out of a bubble gum or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then also a thing, like a toy, something you get out of a Kinder Surprise. Uh-huh. They're notoriously terrible, even in high-end ones. So there's lots of people who know Christmas crackers will know you get a little tiny tool set or a little sewing kit or sometimes like a little mini diary to write in that's like the size of your thumb, like a little like a magnifying glass, like those kind of things. It's a bouncing ball. They're all terrible. I've got a measuring tape a bunch of times, a little teeny tiny measuring tape.
So you can measure one of those. You can measure your disappointment.
Right. And then you get a, just like inside a fortune cookie, you get like a little thing that has like a joke or something. My impression, the whole point of all that was when you open up the Vuller bag and you pull out the little plastic shard, you have the same feeling you do with Christmas crackers. That anticipation is super fun. You got your crown and you get your miniature sewing kit or whatever. You think, oh, that's really not that awesome. Mm. So this is Christmas cracker level is what I'm saying. It is not a great... anyway, people from Britain and Australia, they know what I'm talking about. Christmas crackers. It's a Christmas cracker toy of a thing.
Is there a winner or loser to Christmas crackers? Like...
Well, kind of. Well, you read out your joke, and so then it's not a riddle.
No, back to the part where you're pulling it apart with your sibling, like in a wishbone on a turkey. There's a winner.
Well, it is kind of, because depending on how you do it, some people do it by you reach inside the sides of the Christmas cracker.
Yeah.
I find it very weird that I'm saying all this, but I bet you this is a shared experience with a lot of people. So you reach inside the Christmas cracker and you grab the actual little sticks, and so you pull those, and then you definitely are going to get a good snap bang out of it. But some people instead grab the whole outside, like big beefy mitts, and you pull that. If you do it that way, it often bursts apart and you never know who's going to get part of it or whatever. My family is very much a reach inside, grab the little cardboard stick and pull it that way. I think everyone has their own tradition. So maybe the loser is if you pull it and it doesn't pop, sometimes it comes across and you get nothing. Or one person grips, the other person, it slips out of their hand, and you just pull the whole stick thing right out of the cracker and you have to pull it separately yourself.
Okay.
That's a big L there. I don't know.
talking about grabbing your stick and rubbing your velour bag. We're definitely off Apple.
This podcast episode has gone off the rails completely. So, couple more things in this box. I have three discs. This is the Apple II version of this. So I've got three discs. I like that they're labeled in that, like I hold the first disc and it says side one, other side is side two.
Thank you very
much. And so like, it's really a game for beginners. There are two card things. So I've got an Infocom warranty card, very traditional for Infocom games. And then I've got the one thing you always get that's like unique to each computer. Like this same box would have been used for IBM, for Apple II, for Commodore, for whatever. And they stick in the whole reference card for your particular model. So I've got the reference card here for the Apple II series, which basically tells you how to launch Apple II software. Stick the disk in and turn it on, et cetera. But the thing that's the terrible metaphor is we've got a square box and all of this stuff I just talked about, I've put back in the box, fits in there beautifully, kind of snug, it's great. There is also software for your Apple II series. It is a multi-page glossy flyer from Activision, who at this point now has purchased Infocom. Mm-hmm. So on the bottom, there's a bunch of logos, Activision, Infocom, GameStar, another Activision logo, Lucasfilm, Solid Gold Software, etc. So it's got all of those. And if I open it up, it's got pictures of a bunch of different software that I could at this time have bought for my Apple II. Rampage, it's got some of the Infocom things. It's got Borderzone and Sherlock and the Infocomics and the Zork things. It's got Crossbow. It's got... GFL championship football. What the heck is the GFL? So Star Rank Boxing 2. But the thing is, when I put this in the box, it doesn't quite fit. It's too long by about half a centimeter. And so when you push in the box, the bottom has to curl up to fit in there. So when you pull out it's all like folded up but not quite creased, so it just got like a J shape on the bottom. So they've created this whole thing and they put in a brochure that doesn't fit in the box. So clearly Activision didn't think to reprint their brochure to fit in this custom Infocom box, and nobody at Infocom decided when they're making the box they should check the size of the Activision brochures. These are not two companies that are working hand in glove. So that was pretty funny when I pulled it out. I'm like, wow, there's a statement of Infocom's ownership of Activision's ownership of Infocom. Here's your folder, just shove it in the box.
Ship it. Well, I'm sure that's your biggest criticism of this game, so...
Yes, that's it. Everything else is perfect.
Right.
Oh, it's going to be a bumpy ride, listeners.
Mm-hmm. Right, so...
So I've got an original box, but I didn't play it. using those floppies. As usual, I like to play on other things. And once again, I turned to my lovely vintage iMac G4, which is still the vintage computer of my life. Mm-hmm. And so I played the Mac version on that, which had really lovely graphics, like full color, beautiful graphics. But like Shogun, it was a fixed screen size. So I changed the resolution to 640 by 480 so it would fill the screen. Mm-hmm. And it played amazing under Mac OS 9. No crashing, no issues, smooth, fast, beautiful, like really rock solid software.
Nice.
That was actually the done.
I played it on DOSBox on my Mac, so I played the DOS version, which is not my favorite way to play. And I'm going to try to see if I can find another way to play the next graphical game we're going to be playing, because DOSBox, you can have the window size that it wants, or you can have full screen, and you can't have, there's nothing in the middle. You know, either it's going to take over my computer, or it has this window that's smaller than I would like it to be. So
are you sure about that?
Yeah,
at least you tried like command 2.
Command 2
doubles it.
Really? All right, here, let me go to the DOSBox here. Command 2, it's just putting 2s on the screen.
Well, but are you commanding them enough? Command that 2.
Let's listen. Okay, do technical support. I'm not getting any of that. I'm just getting a lot of 2s. But if I do Command F, no, I don't know. That's not even working.
Okay, but I know that, I do know that it's a config file that will change things. So you could go and edit that. Hmm. Welcome to DOS. Hmm. But anyway.
Great. Anyway, yeah. All right, I'll check it out. So anyway, I've been using DOSBox, and it's not as fun as...
That's what we on RCR call a feedback generator. Everyone's now firing up their email to send us how to do that. Well done, Kay.
By the time I get your letter, we will be done with...
Still flailing at this, sending the letter.
That's true. True enough. Yikes. How do we talk about this game? They decided to get rid of the parser and to really lean on the graphics. That you can mostly play this game using a mouse only, or
mostly is doing a bunch of lifting there. Yeah. What is up with them suddenly deciding you have to type stuff like halfway through the
right.
game?
Right. Yeah. One of my notes is like all of a sudden I said halfway ? Because I did not finish this game, and I don't know how I could have been 10% of the game.
You didn't finish?
No.
As Kay knows, I didn't finish before him. I gave up a long time ago.
Halfway ? Through the game, new interface event, all of a sudden you have to type words in a foreign language. And you know,
you say in a made up language.
In a made up language. Elvish, I guess.
Elvish, yep. Yeah. Suddenly type Elvish. It's right. Like, wait, what am I doing? We'll get to it. I actually didn't have a problem with that puzzle and I liked it, but I found it very jarring that I suddenly had to type. I don't understand why they didn't put the words on the bottom and I had to pick through them. It could have easily been implemented that way. It was so weird.
So I didn't actually use a mouse. I basically went through this game using arrow keys and spacebar to navigate.
I did the same thing. It's way faster to use arrow keys on the bottom. So we should describe the interface because it's very different than a typical Infocom game. So, and I don't know if it's different on other computers than this, but I played the Mac version. And so the Mac version, you have your window and the top 4/5 at least of the window comprise the main viewing area, the left side of which, say the left third, so the left third of the top 4/5 is
I have to do some algebra here. Hold on.
Graph this out. Okay. That's what, and then I want you to get 3 pints out of these 2 glasses, one which can have 2 pints. No, so, and that's where the graphics appear. And I really like the graphics more than Shogun. I thought the graphics were excellent. Mm-hmm. And then on the right side is the Chronicle, which is basically the text of the game, but the game is purporting to be a book kind of written in like after the fact. So when you type what you're doing or you enter your commands by arrow key or whatever, it describes the results. And I thought that was pretty effective. Like I liked the fact that instead of just it being a game, it's more like you're reading a book, but you get to say what happens next in the book. And so that real embracing of an attempt to make interactive fiction, I thought that was successful.
Okay.
And that was pretty cool.
So basically, like, you're saying, like a normal Infocom game is written in present tense, and this is written in past tense.
Yeah, but it also felt different. With a normal game, it does really feel like I type this and it just tells you the immediate results of that. But it doesn't feel like I'm stringing together a story. Like the way this is written just reads like a story. I think if you did a transcript of this, you could just read it and be like, here's a book about a guy who flailed through some puzzles and never got to the end. Which doesn't be a good book. But it just, it read, I don't know, it just somehow the prose felt different. But anyway, that's the case. So you got your top window, left side is graphics, right side is the chronicle, is the text of the game. But then what really sets it apart is the bottom, instead of being a place where you're going to type, it's not a parcel line anymore. There are instead some columns. I guess it's five columns. And in those columns, it lists, like on the left side, the party members. Oh no, first is the verbs. So you have verbs that can be done. Is that how it goes? Or is it something else? No, it's menu commands first.
It's like menu commands
right. Like back or whatever.
Yeah.
And save. And then the next column is the members of your party, up to five of those. Then the next column is
the verbs.
Verbs. Yeah. It's the verbs they could do. And so you don't actually click on the people. It's just next to the people will be three columns of things they might do. Like you see the word cast. That's only going to appear beside the wizard. So you click cast or arrow down to cast and hit return. Mm-hmm. And then it casts. And then the next column will give you a list of the spells you might consider to cast. You might say cast and then say, okay, what spell? You might levitate. And they'll say, okay, right. Levitate on whom? And then you're kind of stringing together a sentence that way. Is this faster than typing? No. And it really contributed to making this feel much more like a choose your own adventure game.
Yes.
Because you get to the bottom, it's more like, here are the five verbs you could type. So there's no flailing for verbs. There's a list that you have up to at most five at a given time.
But sometimes the different players will have the same verb. Like two different people can examine something and
right. Or go down a hole or whatever. Or right. Go west. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or tell a story. There's a few times where you ask somebody to tell you stories and things. And I thought it was neat. I didn't really love it, but it didn't get in my way. Like once I got into a rhythm of playing the game, I was able to kind of read the chronicle and say, okay, what do I want to do? And you look down, it's like, what do you want to do next? Here are your five choices.
Right.
Like, I will choose cast. I mean, boy howdy, it's mostly choose cast. The magic in this isn't nearly as fun as the Enchanter stuff. The Enchanter stuff magic is much more open-ended, much more creative mm-hmm. and fun. But there's a lot of magic in this, and I kind of dig the magic. There's a lot of magic, a lot of magic.
It took me a while to get my head around the interface, but I did. It was so different from the other games, and I, you know, it was kind of awkward, kind of clumsy at times, but you know, once you get it, then you get it, and it's fine. But yeah, you said there was a lot of casting. I felt there was a lot of just like examining and scouting ahead. You had to do that every time, all the time.
A lot of scouting ahead.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, it's like any Infocom game, you've got to examine everything. But here, everybody has to examine everything, and then you have to scout ahead, and if you don't, you know, the bandits will get you, or the bad thing will happen, and so...
Whenever I've played computer role-playing games, the really earliest games, early ones, the original Ultima stuff, that's it. I really liked it when it was my avatar was just me. Something gets lost a little bit when I'm controlling a party of five. I like playing role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons where there's a bunch of us and everybody has their own character. I don't really get lost in a character when I'm controlling five characters. Mm-hmm. Well, there's the one here, Tag, who's basically your avatar. I don't really ever feel like I'm any of them because I'm controlling kind of all of them. And it's just like, okay, now I'm going to have my ranger do this. Now I'm going to have my dwarf do this and blah, blah, blah. And it's all fine, but it gets a lot into resource management. And boy, howdy, will we come back to resource management. Mm-hmm. But I don't enjoy that. It's a weird thing about me. I don't know, but I don't enjoy that as much. I kind of would prefer, like, if you're going to play a game like A Bard's Tale, I want just, it's me. This is my character class. I will go take on the dungeon by myself. That might speak more of me than my love of games, but I don't enjoy it as much when you're having to control three or four or five people.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Or split the party. Or I'm like, just right. Everybody do this. Everybody examine it. Now everybody go. Just all of us together. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Did I mention the Lord of the Rings comes up a bit in this?
You did. You mentioned that.
Because you got this great wizard who sends your fellowship off against this Sauron. I mean, the Dreadlord. It's like, but it's, of course, it's not rings. It's stones or whatever, or rocks or so. I don't know. It's nine or something. Like one little plastic shard to rule them all. in its little bag.
But you have to find 5 plastic shards in the game, right? Isn't it 5 gems you're supposed to?
Oh yes, it's 5 gems.
Yeah. The writing in this game is not good. I found it
a mix of things. I found a spelling mistake, like a full on spelling mistake. I'm like, come on.
Was there an extra U or a missing E?
It was a missing O. Mm. There was, let me scroll down, and it says, spelling mistake, in the dwarf caverns. He carefully removed as much of the magical rock as he could before it became too dangerous to delay any further. Now, those of you on the internet might not know that there are multiple ways to spell too. And you all write things like should of, and you make me want to die. But the reality is, too dangerous is supposed to have T-O-O. Think of that extra O as a way to signify it's too much of something. You got too many O's, like too many E's in whiskey. So yeah, crazy, right? It became too dangerous. What kind of Infocom game has a basic spelling mistake like that? That's crazy.
That's
that never would have happened earlier. That would never would happen when Steve Jobs was alive.
That's true. Yeah. I just maybe it's just the style of, I don't know if it's them or if it's me, you know, it's just this style. Maybe this was a perfect imitation of the Tolkien style, but I just don't enjoy it. I did a screenshot of a thing that I just read this and went, ugh. And then without warning, a large snake lunged at Escher, grabbing him by the leg. Bergen, reacting instinctively, killed the snake with a single blow of his sword. Escher collapsed against a tree. Oh, okay, fine. The snake, he started, grimacing with pain. Nightfang! His voice trailed off, and his eyes took a glazed, vacant look. And then, he's starting to lose me here, just because of the writing style. But that cannot be, I thought. Nightfang were nocturnal, like the Star Stalker, I said, hopefully. And you were right, replied Praxix. They were nocturnal, Bergen. This man will die unless we can find some Westflake route. There is little time. Okay.
We better split the party.
Yeah, run around and find that Westflake route.
That kind of highfalutin text doesn't really bug me in fantasy stories. It's kind of what I expect. Mm. It's like if I'm reading a hard-boiled detective thing, mm-hmm. and I expect, oh, look, check out the getaway sticks on her. She's got gams for days. Like, it doesn't bug me. It's just like how you talk in the genre.
Right.
What bugged me a little more was there's a few times where the text kind of breaks the spell of being a chronicle, because it's written as though I did something else first or whatever. Like, it comes up a whole bunch of times, but there's one example I wrote down where I had these three paths to choose from. And I decide, okay, I'm going to go on the left path first. Probably I'll have to go on all the paths or whatever. And it says, it opens with, this time he took the leftmost path. I'm like, it's not this time. It's the only time. It's the first time. Mm-hmm. So I thought weird that it wasn't coded to say, like, whichever path you take first, it should open with a line that says, he just took the leftmost path. And then maybe do the second one. It goes, this time you took the center path or something. So that happens a bunch of times where it's just assuming I'll go a different way first, and the text is just hard-coded. And it pulled me out of a bit. So those little things I have more quibbles with the text than the flowery language.
Hmm. Fair enough. There's a lot of description of terrain.
But probably from Tolkien. Tolkien loves to say he pulled out the sword. The next 700 pages will be describing the hilt. It's like, oh God. So in this case, it's describing the land. Let's see a lot of land.
Let's see. I did a screenshot of this too. See, I really don't have much to say about this game, so I'm resorting to reading things. We left the lake, climbing out of the valley and into the northeastern hills. Following a narrow path, we marched until, late in the afternoon, the path climbed steeply up a high ridge. We arrived at dusk, as dusk approached, and stood in awe of the world that surrounded us. Looking back, we could follow the long canyon path back to the horizon, where I imagined I could see the fork just beyond Lavos. But the view ahead filled us with astonishment, for a vast forest stretched out before us, thick with pine, fir, and redwood. Beyond the forest, a wide river flowed from the north, disappearing into the deep canyons to the south, and beyond the forest, the Sunrise Mountain, its jagged peak towering high above the surrounding mountains. That was just one screenful of a lot of description of terrain. I don't know. What I'm saying is the writing was not for me.
It wasn't as funny.
No, it's exactly
as yes. Infocom games. Like, that's a thing that even the dark Infocom games a lot of times have a lot of humor, and it's just not here. And it's funny because this guy, this Mark Blank fellow, I don't know if you know him, but he kicked off Infocom. He's the Zork guy.
Yeah.
Right? And so Zork is just riddled with humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even a huge fan of the Zork games, to be honest, but they're so funny and so like famously funny, and all of that's not here. And I think it could have been. I think if this game had been a comedy, I might have liked it way more and been overlook a lot of things. And maybe be able to finish it. I couldn't finish it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not because I was like, I couldn't stand it anymore. I mean, I literally am unable to finish. I do not have the ability to finish the game. I'm not qualified to beat this game. It's too hard for me.
I didn't finish it because I'm probably also not qualified to finish it, but I really lost interest, and I could not, even after a couple of attempts, get myself to have interest in this type of storytelling. And it wasn't, I mean, if it was, there's a lot of things an Infocom game can do to pull me in. You know, there could be an interesting NPC or a super fun character. There could be humor that goes, you know, there could be even just like knowing, okay, I'm not loving this, but I have 65% of the points. You know, this game doesn't even give you like any sense of how far along you are in the journey.
You kind of know you're getting your rings, not your rings, your shards, your things.
Right. Yeah.
Stones.
So I also didn't finish, is what I'm saying. But for lack of interest, really. And I feel bad about that because I think the only other game that I can think of that we've done.
Was there one? I think there was one, right? That you said I just can't.
Well, there was Sherlock, of course. The other one that springs to mind is the first game we played, Zork 1. I didn't finish because I finished it, but I didn't have full points because I didn't want to deal with the thief again. And because I killed the thief, and you're not supposed to do that. And
I wonder how much easier I would find the first Zork 1 now than the first time we played it. I wonder if I could
we'll find out because that's what we're playing again next.
Oh, God. There's always more Zork. There is more Zork, but yeah, my goodness.
Yeah, there's a lot.
See, I didn't finish for a totally different reason. I didn't finish for the worst reason, which is the Walking Dead. Run out of resources. So you got to get these regents. Like, there's so much spell casting, and honestly, a lot of the puzzles are solved by spell casting. Sometimes it's making the right choice or using a thing or whatever. I want to talk at some point about this blue amulet pipe thing that I don't even know what's happening on this. So pass spoiler defense. I've got one puzzle I really liked and one puzzle I still don't understand. So maybe you can help me with that one. But you solve a lot of puzzles by casting the right spell. There's a thing, and so you'll cast whatever and on a party member or on the problem or whatever. So you, like the Enchanted series, you solve a lot of problems with spells. And the way you cast these spells is using regents. You got to get an air regent for certain spells or a dirt regent or whatever. So I'm totally fine with that. The problem is it seems to be there is a specific number of regents that you need. Like, say you need to collect 48 to cast 48 spells, and there are literally 48 regions in this game, and you can solve many puzzles multiple ways. But if you solve puzzle 18 by using an air regent spell that happens to get you past the puzzle, but you should have solved it using a water regent spell to get past the puzzle, you will end up with one too few air regents at the end of the game, and you cannot finish. And you don't know that. You just, like, on move 35, made your game unwinnable, and the entire game is like a complete Walking Dead state.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through the game three complete times, the second time of which, because the first time I run out. I get on the ship, and I run out of air things, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, I'm within sight of the final battle, I think. You're going to this island, and I get there, and I've just run out. And so the game ends. And technically, it's not a death. It says, oh, there's no bad endings, but we don't win, right? Like, we're off to fight the bad guy, and I never even get to the bad guy. The game ends and says, well, you often wonder what happened to your friends. So, like, well, we were probably all killed by the bad guy. Man, what happened? So if you don't even confront the bad guy, how is that not effectively a bad ending, a death ending? So I got to that the first time after trying so hard and resorting to a lot of hints. So I played through again, and I resorted to a crazy number of hints. I just wanted to get to the ending, like just burn through it. Got to the same place. So the third time through, I literally followed a walkthrough. I opened the walkthrough on screen, and I typed everything it said, and I ended up in the exact same place again. Following a walkthrough, I still didn't get to the end of the game. Never met the big bad, just on a boat, and just the game ends. Incredibly frustrating. So even the walkthrough, the one I followed, there must be something I'm just not seeing or missing one little command or something, but 3 out of 3 times I end up with not enough air regents. Nonsense. In most games, I'd be able to go in and just like hack the game and cheat and give myself more of a resource. I've considered doing that, but And then I finally just gave up. If literally typing in the commands from a walkthrough, just following all the steps, like a big old cheater, I still couldn't finish the game. That's I'm just not interested.
You're right.
Very disappointing.
I did not get that far, but it is frustrating. I read when I was looking at a walkthrough, apparently there is a command that the magician guy can do. You know, he can like talk about magic or explain about magic or something near the beginning of the game. And if you do that, he uses a regent to like give an example of like how magic works. And if you just do that simple thing to, you know, show off your magic prowess to your buddies, you've screwed it up. You cannot win the game, you know, so you'll find out hours later that you don't
That's
have
harsh.
Enough. Yeah.
Harsh. In the book, if I pull up
the book,
I've gone back, not the little fold that doesn't fit me, but in the instruction manual,
yeah.
It says, we were joking about this earlier. It says, save allows you to make a snapshot of your position in a story, a bookmark, if you will, so you may return to that precise spot in the story at a later time. Unlike other games you may have played, Journey tries to lessen the interruptions you suffer by needing to frequently save your game in place. Instead, you will probably enjoy the flow of the story more if you avoid using save regularly the first time through the story. Like, it just... Dude, I had to go back so many times because like, oh wait, no, I used that region and I shouldn't. Like, you're so aware that it's so resource limited. I saved like a billion times.
Yes, I did the same. And it also says there are no dead ends. Feel free to experiment and take chances. Every action you take will cause the story to move forward. And I feel like that's not...
I mean, technically,
really.
The story moved forward until it said, well, I guess you just ended and never met the bad guy and you wonder what happened to your friends. I'm like, what? That's so crappy. It says try to play as much as possible without overusing save. Remember, all puzzles can be solved logically and without resorting to try and die brute force methods.
That's not true.
If you are unable to solve a puzzle, you might eventually want to refer to the musings option to reach after reaching an ending.
I did like that. It didn't help me much, but I liked the idea of it.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I like that. I'm just getting hot about it. But the choose your own adventure feeling of this carries through to this ending. Like, I don't think... Like, I remember choose your own adventure game or choose your own adventure books, and I quite like them. And like everybody, I would end up reading them with like 5 or 6 fingers stuck in various places.
Yes.
So I could go back. I'm like, here, wait, mark that here. Okay. And I'm playing it like a weird cat's cradle to let me get back to things. And yet, even with doing that, I don't think ever in any Choose Your Own Adventure book did I get to the perfect, you won everything amazing ending. I always end up with some, well, at least you didn't die, or like most of your legs are still intact or something. And the earth was technically saved. I never get to that great ending. And because it's a branching tree and there's like 400 endings, all of which except one are not the good ending. And that's a real difference from most Infocom games. Most Infocom games are, there's an ending, and it's the good one. Maybe there's an alternate 1 or 2 endings, and they're not as good. Or in the case of the Pirate Queen one, it's the better ending. But most of the time, it's just like, you end because you die. You know you made a mistake, and you're dead, so you back up, and you keep going until you get to the end of the story. This, like most Choose Your Own Adventure games, has mostly unsatisfactory endings, and you have to navigate perfectly through a whole bunch of choose your own adventure choices to wind up on the one good ending, or even get to a chance to have the ending. And that's not what I want from an Infocom game at all.
Right. Yeah, right. This did feel like one of the first notes I made was that this was choose your own adventure, and just like this game seemed like it's on rails, and you have to do exactly what you're supposed to do to stay on the track and head in the right direction. And
but differently than Shogun did. Shogun felt like you better type what happened in the book.
Yeah.
Or guess what happened in the book, or too bad for you. This is more just like there's five things. Not necessarily one is canonically worse than the other because it represents something in the book. It's just like, no, Mark Blank decided you better go left first, or too bad for you, you'll find out in 30 moves you lost.
Right.
Boo to that, I say. I say boo.
Boo. Boo, boo indeed.
Praxis casts boo. So I think that's all I got. It's disappointing. It's a shame that this is like how Infocom ended. Like this, like we've played a bunch of games and we've got another Infocom game still to play, but this is like canonically the last of the real Infocom games. If you're gonna go starting with Zork 1, also Mark Blank, and ending, you're gonna end with Journey. This is the end of the journey.
Right.
And it's a remarkably disappointing game.
It is. It was not fun. And
yeah, it's a shame.
If this there was a lot more of this, I would not have been playing.
It
much
didn't make
in
me
Infocom.
As like angry as a couple of other things, like the one with all the dude bros and stuff. Like there's maybe worse games.
Right.
But there's an argument to be made that this is the worst game because I literally gave up on it. I don't think I gave up on any of the other ones. And I even tried to resort to a walkthrough to get through this. Finally, I'm just like, you know what? This game is terrible. This game, it should not have been released. This is unfinished.
Yeah. No, it wasn't.
Or should have an easy version that says, you know what? We're going to throw in 10 more of all the regions so you can get to the ending if you feel like seeing it.
Sure. That's a good idea, actually. I wasn't having fun with it. It wasn't, the story wasn't interesting. I didn't like the writing style. I didn't find it funny. And so the interest level wasn't there for me. And I didn't learn any words, and I can't even tell you about the stats because it's written in such a different coding whatever that I can't even tell you how many ways there are to die, although apparently the answer is
well, no. it's like there's like no ways to die, but there's also almost no way to win. So it's not like a great combo. That's not like a good trade-off.
Right.
I also feel really guilty, like talking so negatively about somebody's work. I feel like Mark Blank's going to listen to this and I'm going to make him cry. And I feel bad about that. Because he's a super talented guy who did like amazing things.
Like, sure. We've entered the Carrington guilt segment of the podcast. It's not the first time we've done this.
Right? I feel super guilty when I review something negatively. But this is the Zork guy, and like, I don't know.
Right. But I mean, yeah. I don't know. I'm not in Mark Blank's mind, but you know, apparently, the company had split up, and the company was in one city, and he's now in another city, and he's probably just doing it and just trying to just get it done, and he probably wasn't super into it either, and this is not the company that he created, and this isn't the even type of game that he had wanted to, that he had pioneered, and you know, maybe he just didn't give a care at this point.
Maybe. I just feel guilty because it's not like I can say, this game is terrible, let me show you my game that's better. So
right.
It feels like disingenuous to really like attack this thing, but I guess you don't have to be a great musician to be a music critic, but I still feel guilty when I say such negative things.
Sure. Is that everything we have to say before the spoiler fence?
Let's do it. I want to find out what the heck that puzzle means.
All right.
There's a puzzle that I don't understand in this game.
I might not even have gotten to it. Our next game.
Gosh.
Let's talk about our next game.
We got one left, right?
One
Infocom game left.
Yes, that we haven't played. We're going to be playing. It's a Zork game, Carrington. I know how you love
it's
this
all,
one.
It's Zork all the way down. You never stop having Zork games. That's the one thing I learned about Infocom, is there's so much more Zork than you think.
We're going to be playing Zork Zero, which was Infocom's penultimate game, I believe. It was their 32nd game. I know that. It was in the same, you know, one of their graphical, their final last games in there with Arthur and Journey. And
So it's all, you know what, of course it's a graphical game, otherwise we wouldn't have kept it.
Right.
In my mind, for some reason, I was thinking it was more of a traditional Zork game. So it's another graphical one. Oh.
Yeah. Yep. It's another graphical game.
But I think it's supposed to be well-regarded. It's supposed to be a good one, I think.
I hope so.
I hope so.
Because after these last couple, it feels like a slog.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, we're going to be playing Zork Zero, and all that I know about it really is that Nathan wrote in at some point, make sure you have the highest quality graphics file. It has a .mg1 extension and was missing from the CD-ROM collections. So I have the CD-ROM, actually, and I downloaded the MG1 file, and my DOSBox version of Zork Zero, which I booted up just a little while ago, doesn't recognize the MG1 file. So I might be playing it with the EGA version instead of the VGA version. I mean, I haven't started it yet, but I, you know, just fired it up to anyway. Or my version just, I might have to download something else and try to make it. I think EGA graphics are good enough for me, frankly. I'm a simple man.
I don't currently own a sofa, so I also am a simple man.
Oh, you gave it to your
my nephew. That's why in case listeners are wondering if I'm extra echoey, I am indeed. I sit here in this room looking even more robbed than usual. My theory is I'm going to appreciate my next sofa more by having this gap where I literally have only one chair in my whole house to sit on now.
And this was your leather sofa that you felt guilty about having because you're vegetarian, right?
Yeah. It feels super weird to have for so long, but you know, life changed. So I got a new one coming eventually. I didn't even order it. I know I did order just before I gave my nephew my current one. So I'm going to be sofa-less for a while. I'm totally good with it. I have the philosophy of the medium towel, which is too long to explain, but it's my fundamental philosophies. But also, I think having a gap without the sofa is going to make me actively appreciate my next sofa / couch / Chesterfield, if you will, more.
Davenport? I don't know.
Get myself a Davenport. Get myself a fainting couch is what I need for when I swoon, like clutch my pearls because you haven't read a book.
I see.
So anyway, Zork Zero is next is what we're saying.
Yep, that's what we're saying.
On this derailed episode. So okay, I have a question for you. So the last few we played keep having colons in them. This was The Quest Begins. Is Zork Zero, I think it's one of those as well, right? Is Zork Zero colon something?
That's an excellent question. I don't think so. Is it? Let's Google that right now. Listen to Kim.
I can Google that for you.
Yeah.
I guess I could have Googled it myself instead of asking.
Let's see. Oh, yes, you're right. You're right. There is a colon.
I had a vague memory. It was.
Zork Zero, colon, The Revenge of Megaboz.
Megaboz?
Megaboz.
I like it. Okay.
Yeah.
Megaboz.
Yeah. It's not as good as the Coconut of Quindor.
No, but still pretty good. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is it by? Is it another Mark Blake?
It's by Moretzky.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it's already.
Okay. So that's he's Planetfall and Mind Forever Voyaging and okay, good. Hitchhiker's one of them. Okay, nice. Okay, I like that. That's good stuff.
Yeah, those are hopeful hopeful signs. We've got Megaboz and we've got Moretzky, Moretzkaboz.
Moretzkaboz. The Coconut of Moretzkaboz. I like it. Okay, cool. So next up will be Zork Zero. But first, shall we leap over the spoiler fence and talk more about this game?
Yes. Do the spoiler fence blurb, please.
Here's the spoiler fence, and this is its blurb. So now we are going to talk about extra details of this game that probably we've already spoiled for everybody, in a sense, that we've made you not want to play it. So after the spoiler fence, we're going to talk in more detail about the particulars of the game. So puzzles and their solutions, the ending of the game, all the little details that you might not want to know should you wish to play this game. And while Kay didn't like the game, and I didn't like the game, and neither of us see any reason why anybody would like the game, you might think you might like the game, because some people like everything. I like Sherlock, for instance, so you never know. If you want to save yourself spoiler-free so you can attack Journey on your own, now is the time to stop listening. The podcast will always be here. You can come back after you've played the game and see what we think, and then you can write it and tell us how we're wrong. That's how we generate feedback. But if you're not going to play the game, or you've already had it, or you already played it, I've already had it with this game, you've already played the game, then join us now on the other side of the spoiler balustrade, where we are going to spoil the heck out of Journey.
Yeah. How can you couldn't possibly spoil the ending of this game because you haven't seen the ending of this game.
That's a really good point. As far as I know, what this game is all about, you struggle. Then you get on a boat and you hang out for a while. You get becalmed and you have one air spell left. So you need to both generate like
I need to do two things with air spells. I need to create a wind so I can blow my ship towards where I want to go, and I have to use like levitate to get somebody up high to raise a sail or something like that. And I need two air regents. I have one air regent, and so instead, once I cast the one air regent doing either of those two things, it immediately says, and then you just kind of hung out on the boat and then eventually went home and you always wondered what happened to your friends. Like, that is how this game ends. Ridiculously terrible. Maybe that is the best ending. For all your people writing, go, oh no, that is actually, the whole point was Mark Blank was undermining the entire idea of these kind of games and said, maybe you just never beat the bad guy, man. Maybe this is much more subversive than we're thinking.
I think the subversive part is having a spell called Create Wind.
Okay, there's that. Boy, and you levitate a lot in this. Levitate was a very useful spell. Lots of levitating. And the rain, that one time you put out the fire for the elves, you cast the rain. I don't know, man. It's just like all these regents. I don't know why there's not a version that you say just have unlimited regents. Like, why can't I have God mode of regents? And just,
right. I don't think I managed to solve the elf thing. I mean, I put out the fire, but I tried to, but it was too late. And the elves...
All I did with that was you cast rain, and that gets rid of the fire, and then you got to talk to the elvish people to tell them that, to convince them that you're friendly.
Hmm.
And you do that because that guy, what's his name, Hearth or something, whatever his name was, had told you the story of meeting the elves, and so you now know how to say, like, I'm friendly or whatever.
Right.
So that's one of the typing things.
Yeah, the typing bits. And I had to... Yeah, I was still paying attention to the game at that point, and I did not. I had to look up how to cheat, what to say to the elf lady, because I don't know, because I didn't know how to say, hi, I'm a friend of so and so, and you know, I found that part of the game odd, because you the descriptions of the elf woman was just like, you see a beautiful elf woman, and then you get close and you're like, oh, she's hideous, she's a monster, oh, she has leathery skin, and then you're just like, oh yeah, actually she's pretty hot. You know, I'm just like, okay. It's just like, yikes, come on, man.
Yikes indeed. regents always ran short of regents. All my notes are about like these stupid regents and trying to find more of them, find one more of them somewhere. Here's a good one. I liked the puzzle with the runes. We have to read the runes and figure out what to say to open the storage room.
Yeah.
Did you get to that one?
I don't think so.
Okay, so there's these runes on this door that you can make appear. And it says like Lorum Ara Equicale. It's like this language you can't read, but you can be translated. And so it says, with the translation, it says, please only say gate open to enter storage room. But it might be, please only say gate/door/entrance open to enter/access/entrance storage room. But then there's this thing somewhere in the game or somewhere where it tells you like this language is read like backwards, right to left. So if you read it backwards, it's really saying storage room entrance to open door, say only please, which is, you know, welcome to Tolkien, like speak friend and enter, like my goodness. But I took it as more of an homage than the complete ripoff that it is. But I liked it. Like I liked it as a puzzle that you have to kind of figure out from the translation which of the possible words would be most likely. And then remember that you read it backwards. And then when you read the sentence, go, oh, it's just asking me to say please. And so then you know now that Lorem means please. So you type Lorem and bingo, the storage room door opens. That was a neat puzzle with a neat mechanic that was totally solvable. Didn't require any regents. Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess it required regents to show the runes. But still, required few regents. And I dug it. I liked that puzzle a lot.
Cool. Are you sure you weren't you were just reading filler text, Lorem Ipsum?
I may have. There was a lot of filler text in this game. I could make a whole game out of filler text.
Okay, so you get in by reading it backwards or not, and then
so you read backwards, you realize that you got to just say the word Lorem, and so you just type Lorem, and it opens the door. But it was neat. I liked it because it's like you got to puzzle it out and puzzle out what word means what, and then realize you got to read backwards. And I thought it was a neat puzzle. Like I kind of liked the mechanic of it. That was really the only puzzle in the game I really liked. But there was one puzzle I couldn't understand. So, and it's super early on. I resorted to a ton of hints. Like I just started needing hints crazy early in this game. My goodness. But I couldn't figure out what to do with the blue amulet and those various pools and tubes. Did you get to that part?
Yes, I did get to that part. And that also is on my things I cheated on list.
Yeah, I cheated on it too, and it told me what to do and how to follow. I basically followed the hints. So I ended up back to the party with the animal, but I don't know. I don't understand it. I don't understand what
I did the same thing. I did it. I followed the things. I got the blue amulet, but I didn't like why did I do this? And I didn't understand it.
I was hoping you'd be able to explain it to me, because I'm sure it's one of those things like I don't want to say it, but there's a puzzle in one of those Zork games that you kind of have to get what it's talking about. Like, it's all a metaphor for a certain activity. Once you realize what that activity is, you're like, oh right, okay, now I get what I'm supposed to do here. And I think that's what's going on. I think I'm supposed to understand that these descriptions of tubes and pools, I'm supposed to realize that that's actually a pipe organ or whatever. And if I'm like, oh, then I should do it. It's something like this. It's something like that. I got this feeling, it was like nagging me, that I'm supposed to understand that it's vaguely describing this as tools and tubes and pools and the stinky pool and all these things. And I'm supposed to understand what the stinky poo is. Like, but I couldn't. Like, I didn't get the overarching metaphor. So I was completely lost. I basically just had to follow the hints, and it would say, take the amulet, go over here, drop the blue amulet in this tube, go over that tube, dive in, you'll find it, pull it back out. I'm like, okay, but why did that work? So I was hoping you explain. Maybe someone can write in and explain.
Sorry.
I know there's a metaphor there. I'm supposed to have understood that this is actually a, I don't know, blood circulation. Maybe it was supposed to be a heart. Maybe it was, like, I don't know. Like, I couldn't piece together what this, it was, you know, sometimes Infocom, they'll describe a thing intentionally vaguely, so it takes you a second to realize what it's actually talking about.
Sure.
Like, describing a weird way. You're like, oh, you just mean it's a hammer. You're just saying whatever.
Yeah.
That felt like this. But I never could figure out that it was a hammer. Like, darn. That was my worst puzzle, and the best one was the storage room I liked. And the rest weren't really puzzles. It was mostly just, you've got only five things to do, and usually one of them is obvious. Like, it's there's fire. I guess I should cast rain. Or I can't reach that thing up high. I guess I should cast levitate.
Right.
A lot of levitate.
And this, I don't know, a lot of learn by, I don't want to say learn by dying, but it was just learn by screwing up. I mean, at this one point, you go left or right, and then if you go the wrong way, then you get basically in a maze of twisty passages that you can't solve, and you have to either send a scout ahead, or you have to look at the map at the right time, and, you know, using a certain, the light or something, so find the read the glowing runes on the map in order to know which way to go, and, you know, I figure that stuff out, but. No, it's, I don't know. At no point did I have fun in this game, so it's hard to be excited.
Well, see, at the very beginning, I would say I did. The first part where you're just getting your crew together and you're going up towards the river and you got to figure out how to cross the river, which is pretty easy. Just like go upstream as far as you can. So when you're crossing, you have like the most chance to get across.
But, right.
So easy stuff. So then when you're like, you know, and just like, going into that tavern and like, and I kind of liked the interface, and I was getting into the story, and I liked the way it was a chronicle and stuff. And it just, but it slowly just went off the rails for me, where I was like, what's happening? And then once I got to the end and couldn't finish it, and no matter how far back I went, I never seemed to have enough regents, and I didn't feel like I was missing anything. It just completely got spoiled for me. But up until like around the halfway point, like around when you start to have to type stuff, that's about when it started to lose me. But up until then, I was having fun. Even with the night fang, the daytime night fang.
But were you still having fun when you had to do that, all that same stuff the third time through?
No. Well, the third time was easy, because I just literally just on the one computer opened a walkthrough, and then just on the Mac just typed, okay, now it says do this. Now it said, and I just followed it, and yet still didn't get through. Crazy, man. I'm that bad at this game. It may be me.
Just remember, this is someone's favorite game. Somewhere.
Oh, gosh, everything's someone's favorite pit. So, did you get to the pits, like the fire pit thing?
No, I don't think so.
So there's these two pits, and you can go down to the first one, and that's where you get the pickaxe or whatever. But there's like, there's this dial you have to turn to a rune, and then there's like, in this other room, you have to like match the rune, and then you turn the rune in the second one. If you do it wrong, you die. But I didn't know that. In fact, as far as I can tell, there's no way to know which is the rune you're supposed to do. Like, you can't, if you want to do both pits, you can't, you have to be in the pit and when you turn it, which means it's going to fill with lava or whatever, and you're going to die. So I just saved. And I think the only way to get through that is just pick a random rune and see if you got it correct. But maybe I'm wrong. Like, it just, the walkthrough I read even said the same thing. Like, you're just pick a random rune. There's no way to know. Just say first. Like, huh. What the heck is that, man? Mm-hmm. But it could be that I was, that again, following right. a very bad walkthrough because it didn't get me to the end of the game. So.
Right. Yeah. Huh. What else? What else you got to complain about?
Near the end, you get on a ship called a Zephyr. One of my best friends in my life, guy I love very, very much. I haven't seen him in ages, but still, with pals for years and years and years, a guy named Colin. And he and his wife had a baby when they and they got married in Hawaii on a beach. And it was their first kid, and they named the baby Zephyr. So whenever I see the word Zephyr, I think of little Zephyr. Although his middle name Zephyr, his actual first name is Lumahai, because that was the beach they were named on. And when I asked Colin, what does Lumahai means? He says, it means like it's like a cool breeze. And I said, you know that Zephyr is also a breeze, right? You named your kid Windwind. And he wasn't, there wasn't a look of pleased with me when I said that to him. I will admit that. That was a whoops moment. But whenever I see the word Zephyr, because it doesn't come up much, I always think, oh, it's like Colin's little kid. So I like that. But that's the stupid boat I get stuck on at the end. So I get, and I can't cast a wind. Oh my gosh. It's all, this is why I can't get through this game. It's because I called Colin's kid Windwind. And now I'm stuck on the boat in Journey. I brought this on myself. I've got no one to blame but me. Mm. This is how I'm living my life, Kay.
You've never heard from Colin again since that day, have you?
I have, but it was cold. No.
It was a cold wind.
Boat. So I can't get to the Misty Isle. Like, I'm stuck within sight of the island that I think I go, and I will confront the Dreadlord, but I can't get on his island because I run out of regents, and so that's as far as I get. Do you know roughly how far you got in?
No, I mean, I can tell you. Let's see. I saw the mud. What was it called? The blue amulet stuff with help.
Yep.
Right, and that's probably as far as
I. The mine with the orcs, and
I don't think so.
You have to kind of get past these orcs, and it wasn't difficult or anything, but it was kind of neat. That was like a scene. Kind of, it's very picaresque. It's all very. Let's go on this scene. Look at the neat, because it's very picturesque in that it's not just episodic, but it wants to talk about the nature, and let's describe the hills again. And now they're orcs and things. But
I don't think I saw the orcs. I liked the art. I don't want to be completely negative about this game. The art was nicely done, and for finally, like, you know, deciding we're going to put graphics in our games, they put some nice graphics in their games. And
it's so weird that artist has gone on to make just the most freaky nightmare paintings. But I thought there was really cool art in the game. I also like the graphics very much. The Mac version has really nice graphics. Especially, we're ending on a high note.
Yay.
Excellent. Yay. Don't play this game.
No.
I can't play this game. I'm so sad though, man. I was doing so well. So now it's going to be the case that, like, I can never say I really finished all the Infocom games. Because I literally can't finish this stupid game even with a walkthrough. I wonder if that's going to nag at me enough that I actually try this again one year in the future. I doubt it. But sad, though. Like, I can't really... I'll never be able to say, yeah, I played like all the way through all the games.
Right.
I literally don't know how this stupid thing ends. Oh, well.
Maybe someone will tell us.
Yeah, you know what? Fine. Listen, like, I'm past the spoiler fence. Feel free to write in and tell me how this story ends. Like, it's like I've got the first 99% of a book, but I can't actually read the end of it because I'm too stupid.
The last page has been ripped out. And
Dreadlord sends his result. It's like, oh, well.
Oh, well.
So I think that's it, right?
I think so.
That's it for Journey. The quest begins. The Infocom ends. Not with a bang, but oh, goodness. So... disappointing, but hey, you know, they can't all be winners. I think the next one with the Mega Boss, that's going to be pretty good. I like that. So This has been Eaten by a Gru, the Infocom podcast. If you want, you can send us email with the ending of this game. Send it to gru@monsterfeet.com or hit us up on Twitter, but it's public, so no spoilers. He is @KSavitz. I am @Carrington. And if you want to help other people find the podcast, and why wouldn't you? We'd appreciate it if you'd give us a nice review on iTunes. The show notes and stuff can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for, I am desperate to think of a Journey song. I've been trying to think of one for ages. I can't think, for, knowing all too well that Journey rhymes with gurney. I don't know. For letting us use his song as our theme too. I had nothing. Next up will be Zork Zero, the Revenge of Megaboss. Or is it the Return of Megaboss? The Something of Megaboss.
So Megaboss is somehow involved.
Megaboss.
Megaboss.
Which you say is Infocom's 32nd game, which hopefully is more fulfilling than its 33rd. And we will see you next time for one more Zork, because there's always more Zork.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Thank you. Thank you for podcasting with me, Kate.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Dagger Boy.
I love it. Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
I can't believe you remember Dagger Boy. That's great.
I had to hold on to that all episode.
whole second half of the episode, I was literally trying to think of another Journey song, and I couldn't think of one.
You know,
I thought I knew more Journey things.
Could have Googled that.
I could have, but you know. Oh, who's crying now? That would have been great. I could have worked that in easily.
Sure.
I'm Googling them now. That's why.
Separate ways. Oh, Separate Ways. I could have probably, I've heard of that one.
Ah, darn it. Yes. Only the Young.
You want it.
Yeah. You should draw a blank. I should have Googled. I was standing. Not like I'm not in front of a computer.
Oh, the party's over. Praying. That would have been perfect for a game with a party of characters.
I'm not a very good podcaster.
Yeah, well.
Or a gamer, apparently.